Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in rainy Montclair, New Jersey.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's happening. Let's see your weather count. Nolan, East Coast, New York, New Jersey has rain. Sandy?
I have snow on the
frozen
ground.
Rain. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just flew back in from Miami where they had humidity in the air. Does that count as moisture? It's like melted rain. And now I'm in California where this week there are still fires raging in Los Angeles. I just flew in over top of them all and it is truly heartbreaking.
You did fly over them. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's
now, do you actually see, did you see the fires themselves flying over them?
Yeah. You could see the red flames from the landing when I flew out. No, but this time, yeah, the fire is truly, yeah. Yeah. It's not a fun thing. I mean, it's like one of those things like,
you know what? When you were talking about it a couple podcasts ago, I was amazed at the calm in your voice, and it's because it's a part of life for you, but you're still just too calm.
Well, let's hear. This is, the year is ending well for business. Lots of new projects, inquiries. It's really kind of fun about the number of conversations I've had for just expanded projects, bigger projects, taking over different things. You know, we've done certain parts of presentation design and now we're being asked to take over other portions of design for a lot of clients. We have a really full Q1 project load. It's pretty crazy. Right now we're in the midst, this is kind of exciting for us, we're in the midst of a job search and hire for a staff accountant, which is really, really big news for us. We've really never let anybody handle the company finances but Lori. Kind of me. I mean, I like to think I help or usually
we
cause
know
problems,
we know that that's not acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not there. I do my invoicing eventually. I do my estimates sometimes. I do ask, you know, do we have money for me to spend? But the goal is really for us to project manage, focus on business development, actually be designers without doing extra things, art direct our projects. Internal, so you know it's very exciting. We're yeah, I guess it's a good end to the year because we're pulling in a new team and it's to help us be more productive.
No, I was going to comment that I have always had an accountant and a bookkeeper. Although you're doing something that's a little bit different that I still do myself, and that's generating the estimates and what else did you say? You said something about estimates.
That's our goal. Every project we like to have an estimate, so it's already it does. A couple of things for us. This is probably a good conversation for a whole episode, but we generate an estimate so that one, we can send it to the client and they can sign off on and say, yeah, we've got a contract. And I think I'll actually mention that a little bit later in the conversation today, but it also lets us kind of block out how much time and the timeline so we can put it into what we call the project stack. So we can book out our design team so we know that we can say yes to this project over this time frame. And then when it comes to invoicing, we just compare the estimate to the design log and we can easily take care of it. The problem is a lot of times I'm doing the estimate so I could do the invoice. You know, in other words, everything's already done. I just got to go through the process and it's not really helpful.
And you use QuickBooks. So the estimate is part of QuickBooks and you can just bill the estimate, right?
Correct. Yeah, we do. Okay. We're currently using QuickBooks. I don't think that's going to change. All of our project management is through Workflow Max, which is actually from Xero, which is kind of like, I'll just say the European, although it's based in Australia or New Zealand, version of QuickBooks. And a lot of design and creative industries are starting to use Xero here in the States. So we're debating if we should consider it because it is a seamless flow from estimate to design log to invoice. But our goal is to have somebody take it all over. I mean, we spend, now that we're doing a lot of projects per week, new projects, invoicing projects, tracking the invoices is also a whole nother thing that just slipped through. Okay, that's a whole nother topic. Nolan, how are you doing? How's the, what's happening?
Well, on that note, I do not have an accountant, but end of the year is approaching. So we're doing some end of year tax planning, which whether you're doing it personally or for your business, and in our case, it's both. It's passed through business as an LLC. But yeah, just looking to get all those expenses that we can and actually push out some billing till next year. So this year, for a number of reasons, we're actually trying to get the income as low as possible. Again, tax planning is an important thing. You know, if you can get a client to pay you next year or get an expense this year, it can help in a lot of reasons. So,
but you should have higher expenses now. I mean, the girls are one. Twins are an expense.
Major expense.
But I do not have a good enough accountant to deduct their onesies and their swim lessons.
Photo shoot. You got to use them in a photo shoot. You can pay them I'm not going to say numbers here because I'm not a tax person, but you can pay them the child income rate as part of the family business. And that's 100% tax deductible, I believe,
Yes. If they, I'll strap a cleaning rag to their knees or their butt. And then now they're cleaning the office. Again, end of year, starting to wonder how late I'm going to be with this year's holiday cards.
Always look forward to it.
Yeah. I'm doing something a little different this year, but I still got to design the card that hasn't started. And tomorrow morning I'm off to California for another training with a long-term client. It'll be Northern California, which also has its share of fires.
So. Yes.
Hey, are you going to be, we should talk offline. If you're going to be up in the Bay Area, Lori's there right now.
This will be Los Altos, actually.
So. Yeah, that's a little way. That's probably about 40 minutes
next
out.
Next time, though, I've got my got one of my clients starting to book me for first half of the year, so I'll be in San Francisco at least twice.
Very cool.
First half. That's great.
Sandy, what's happening with you in the end of the year push here?
Let's see. Well, exactly. It continues. The autumn push has transitioned into the winter push. I've finished up a conference, and what was really cool about it is that we successfully used high-end 3D models in PowerPoint.
Really?
Wow. It was really great. And so hopefully, I'm working with their creative folks internally to help them understand why converting their 3D models to an OBJ or I can't remember another compatible one in PowerPoint is worth it for the salespeople who are using their presentations. Right now, here's the mindset. I can convert my 3D model to a PDF, and then the user can convert their PowerPoint to a PDF and merge them.
So it's a static. It's not a. Yep. It's not a true 3D model where you can rotate it and.
There's a component of. I didn't realize this until this last project. There's a component of PDF that allows you to manipulate 3D as a PDF.
Really?
In a PDF file.
Yep.
You need to look at that.
So 3D models are awesome. You got to actually use them, and you got a client to get imagery in there, and they're going to use it going forward. And I'm going to totally look into the PDF thing. Now, are you using full Acrobat or does Acrobat?
Yes. No, I'm using DC.
Acrobat Reader. Okay. Yeah. I'm wondering if Reader would do it.
I can't imagine.
Well, not all clients always have it. So it's sometimes a stopping point. Yeah. What else about it? So autumn push is huge. You finished a conference, which you're not going to talk about, and you use 3D models.
Yep. And another unique project for me is I have a corporate client who is requiring that we build their presentation and their template in Google Slides.
What prompted your Twitter screed?
Exactly. I ended up writing a blog on it because if you are a corporate client and branding is important to you, I don't understand why you would want to use Google Slides. It's great for high schoolers and college kids and small businesses who want to collaborate and anyone who wants to collaborate. I get it. But
I just got done working with the CEO of a very large corporate entity, and his were Google Slides, and I was told convert them. And I said, you know, there could be some problems. So they converted them. There were some problems.
Yeah, you can convert and a lot of it's maintained, but oh my gosh, the masters are get really messed up. But here's just an example. You know, we work very closely with corporations to make sure that their presentations adhere to their corporate identity standards, including colors. In Google Slides, you can add custom colors, but they don't become a part of the theme. You can't change the theme at all.
Not at all.
So you insert a chart, a table, a color block, and it's whatever theme is defaulted. It's a mess.
You can manually update them, and it takes, everybody complains about how long it takes to do things in PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Now, I think actually Keynote takes longer, but it has some nicer visuals, but Google Slides is really, really tedious. I'll just say that to make charts and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. We did the CEO. His stuff was totally unbranded, totally different than everybody else. Entire conference. He was the only one that had his own look.
Yeah. But
I think people that choose Google Slides are really going for convenience over design or, you know, visual communication. And I think that's kind of what it comes down to.
So this one was, and I got the reasoning behind it. It's also, he can work on an iPad Pro. I was like, you know, Microsoft step up, you know, here is the CEO who's choosing Google Slides, knowing it's kind of like not as robust of a presentation tool or design tool, knowing that he can't do his branding standards, but it's so he can actually get his work done. Like, where's your marketing to say, we have a very high-end iPad compatible version of Office and PowerPoint that you could use anywhere? I mean, that was his whole rationale. Man, that's a whole nother topic. Hey, look at all the podcasts we're planning.
Yes.
Actually, that would be a good topic, Google Slides.
We've been using it more and more. Yeah. Getting, I wouldn't say expertise in it, but we're trying to translate our presentation design into it and our PowerPoint knowledge into it. And it's usually like, oh, it doesn't do that. That's the knowledge base or the frustration.
I did have one. I've only done one or two projects this year in Google Slides. I did have one client who sent me a content deck and it was in Google Slides. And I said, do you want this in Google or are we doing PowerPoint? They said, oh, no, we want it to look good. Use PowerPoint.
Oh, said, very nice.
Wow. See, there's a transition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Transitioning to the presentation world news. What do we got? There's a lot going on, I think, but I got some cool ones.
Well, you start.
Okay. Well, this one's kind of funny. Because we're really big on imagery and using legal images and royalty free. And so we always get an annual subscription at this point. We kind of pick one, but this one's kind of funny. So I get an email, which is what prompted this. Royalty free image site Fotolia, Fotolia. Have you guys used them before?
I have not used them, but I recommend it to.
Oh, you got to stop.
I used to recommend it in my training, because it's a budget. It was a budget site,
right? Yes. Here's the deal: it's closed. Adobe bought it and folded it into the Adobe Stock offerings, which is great because we actually are currently using Adobe Stock as our team imagery site. But I mean, we live in an instant gratification time. But I found it so funny that Fotolia closed its website on November 5th. November 5th is the day I received the notice that Adobe has acquired them and they will no longer be like functional. So that wasn't really, I mean, we weren't an actual current Fotolia client, but I thought it was really funny. And then I received a similar notice from Adobe the exact same day. So it's kind of like, hey, as of today, we're no longer in existence.
Well, I was updating some of my training slides and I have a screen grab of Fotolia and I went to just go double check it or to get a new screen grab and it was Adobe Stock. So I swapped it out with Unsplash, I think. Is that Unsplash?
Oh, use them.
Yeah.
They've got I've been using
those sort of free freemium like Unsplash and Death to Stock and 2020, is that what it's called?
I'm not familiar with that one.
I've been using those a lot more because they're really good images.
I would like to do a shout out to a guy by the name of Michael Betts at Image Stream Communications in Michigan. Great guy. And to Julie Terberg, who connected us. We exchanged several emails as he worked through computer options to allow, basically he needed to figure out how to let PowerPoint do both the slideshow for the audience and then presenter notes in the confidence monitor in front of the stage. And basically he needed a computer with two video outs, you know, explaining that you know, he's like, hey, the laptop is not going to be out there. I'm like, yeah, I totally get it. All the show equipment's backstage. The magic happens with presenter out there and things just happen. And so we, you know, we went round and round and, you know, I get a lot of emails asking for information, but not many people follow up with a thank you. And he also sent a photo of the new setup working. So, Michael, glad that everything worked out. Hope your shows go really well.
You know, that's cool, Troy. That's what's unique about our industry, I think, in general, or at least many of us, we work together. I mean, I think it's great that you're willing to help out a competitor, I guess.
You know, competitor, there are so many meetings, so much design work out there. I don't know. I don't think anybody should consider anybody a competitor unless you're like in the same room together doing a pitch to get work. It's like there's competition, but are they a competitor? I'm happy to help out anybody. Hey, that's not an open invitation, by the way. I can't handle everything. But, you know, I'm referring people work we can't do. I'm referring it all the time to other designers. I know we have each handed off projects to each other.
Exactly.
You know, just saying, hey, it's not going to fit either our focus or our timeline. Are you guys available? So it's a good industry. It really is.
I love it.
Okay, so today, projects have parameters. They have what is needed. They have when it's needed. We need to know who needs to approve it. And they also need to let us know how we will be paid. Project scope can be very simple or very robust and very complex. But one thing is almost inevitable. The project scope changes before the final design piece is approved. So today, Sandy, Nolan, and myself, we decided to talk about how we set up the project scope and stories of project scope that, well, it may have continued to expand beyond what we originally had agreed to do. So all about project scope and the boiling frog. Nolan, seeing how this was your... I hope this was yours. I don't think I did it. Give us the boiling frog analogy.
So, okay. So the boiling frog is that if you toss a frog into a boiling pot of water, it's going to jump right out because it's too hot. But if you slowly raise the temperature, then the frog doesn't notice it. And next thing you know, your design agency is dead. It's sort of death by
There's the transition.
Or death by 1,000 power or printout cuts or paper cuts or something like that. All right. So basically, that's scope proof. And you know, it's definitely not unique to presentation. I mean, I worked in the agency world. Sandy, you did as well. So, I mean, that's where I first heard the term when we were talking about, you know, whatever, web projects or mobile. Or, you know,
I think we could have any group of designers. We could have any group of project managers. We could have any group of analysts on, and they'll all talk about project scope and the fact that projects just tend to get bigger.
I'm sure this happens in the world of architecture and manufacturing and anything in which the client just, you agree on what the project is and how much you're going to be paid for it. And then as you get into the project, there are unknowns and things come up and then suddenly, you know, things happen. And I think the biggest thing is every vendor, no matter what sort of industry you're in, is flexible to a degree. But then from the client perspective, if you asked for A, and then you want sort of, you know, as you get into it, I want B, I want C, I want D. That's a different project. And it's time to pay up, essentially, because it's not what we signed on for. So, well, let's talk about sort of how we define a project scope, right? So like what is the scope that we're creeping past, right? So for me, it's basically what's usually defined in the contract, you know, is the designer's responsibilities, those are the deliverables, the parameters, the style. The format, you know, timing, including rounds of revision, who the approvers are going to be.
That's a big one. That's one that a lot of people don't think about.
Good one.
Sandy, what do you say? Like, what's your definition or when you say project scope, what are you kind of encompassing there?
Sure. I consider it the final product delivered via a well understood, and I'm literally reading my definition because I wrote this.
Very organized and
delivered
official.
Via well understood and documented roles and responsibilities and timing and budget parameters. But I forgot, Nolan, to include
the approvers.
Approvers, yes, yeah. Approvers.
So well, that's the thing, right? Like, because scope creep can be, it can be very black and white. Like with presentations, like, oh, well, the scope is supposed to be for 35 slides, but now you're asking for 60. Like that's clearly beyond scope. But it could also be, you told me you were the approver and you approved everything, and then you come back to me next week and say, oh, well, actually, my boss wants all these other changes. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yep. that's beyond scope now.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So one thing that's different when I talk about project is you both said the final product is being delivered, and we call it the final deliverable mm-hmm. because, I don't know, I work so much in product industry. You know, is the car a product? Is the toy a product? Is the pill a product? So we don't say product, I say the final deliverable. But when I think project scope, it's the final deliverable, the timeline for when it is to be delivered, and the number of revision requests included in the estimate. And now I'm going to say, and who needed to approve and say it's all done? Because I wasn't actually thinking of that initially. It's in our statement of work or our project scoping, but I probably didn't make that mentally big enough. Nolan, you win. You get the gold ring. You're the person that brought up probably one of the most important things.
So what is scope creep on that?
Okay. So that is, it's the change in a project scope. So we defined what scope is. Creep starts with making changes to that scope.
And it always starts very subtly, doesn't it?
Right, right, right.
Hey, my new title is this. Could you update the title slide?
Sure, no problem.
Exactly.
We'll make that change.
Basically, anything that happens after project work has started. So it usually is the addition of new features to an already approved feature list, or not, you know, the title, change the title.
How about we say anything after the contract is signed?
Period.
After you got started, it's ready. It's change. My title's different. Hey, we're going to add another presenter. Hey, our corporate colors.
Can you throw an extra slot? Yeah, no problem. That's part of it.
I was going to go with, hey, our corporate colors just changed. Could you update the template and make everything work with the new colors? Like,
well, again, I mean, this is subjective because one of the things I tell clients a lot is like when specifically with colors, if we're not using branded colors or whatever, I'll say, you know, we're going to send you a whole design thing. And when we talk about, you know, that'll include colors and everything. And I will say, you know, if you don't like, you know, if you want to make an edit to the colors, that's actually not a big deal because we're creating, you know, the presentation in PowerPoint correctly. We can tweak a color and mm-hmm. it's global and that's a 30-second change. But so actually that's because a lot of times they'll say, oh boy, you know, we want to darken that green up. How long is that going to take? Well, 30 seconds, like not that big a deal. So you kind of have to educate your client in what is scope creep and what isn't.
That's a good point.
Because they might think that kind of change is huge, but then also if you have a, you know, 150-page print report and they say, oh, well, now we actually want to make it, you know, double-sided and perfect bound instead of, you know,
individual
through a whole
yeah.
bunch or whatever. Oh, well, that is actually a huge change. Oh, really? Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Trust me. So, mm-hmm. you know, those kind of things.
Well, you've just made a point. It's the communication, you know, as a part of the preventative, it's that communication along the way.
Yeah.
And speaking of preventing scope creep, what do you do? What do you do other than communicating to prevent it from happening?
Well, I mean, my biggest macro solution is that we generally work hourly and not on a project basis. So, you know, we do templates, as we've talked about, on a project rate. But most of the presentation design we do work on one-off decks is hourly. And as I explain to clients, I just feel it's more honest for everyone because, as I tell them right up front, scopes tend to expand and contract. So initial phone call, you might say it's a 30-slide deck. But when we get to start working on it and you finish your content, it's 20 slides or it's 50, then it's 15 again. So I always say, we can do a project rate, but I'm going to have to keep rewriting the scope each time, mm-hmm. which is like, and I don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. And I have a lot of long-term clients who are just fine with this. You know, we'll give them a general estimate of hours, but they understand, oh, I estimated 30 hours on this, But then suddenly you double the slides. Well, it's not going to be 30 hours anymore. And they know that. And we don't have to redo a contract or anything.
So you do include a slide count in your contract?
If we're doing a template, absolutely. There's a range. Mm-hmm. There's either a specific number of slides or a range. And even if it's specific, even if it's like a 60 slide deck, if it's 65, fine. We account for that. If it's 58, 55, fine. If it's 100, that's a
big jump. That creeped up there. Before I answer the what do I do in advance to prevent scope creep or the communication, I have actually started giving a slide range because we're taking a lot of presentations and breaking it apart because a lot of people have gotten into a habit of just layering content onto a single slide. I'm like, you know, this would really be better as four slides instead of one, because when you make a PDF or a printout, you actually can't see what your talk is because you've covered it up now, or you have things moving around. Why don't we break those up and use perhaps Morph to move things around? That way we can see the speaking points more clearly. So I've found that over the past year or so, a couple of years, we're actually expanding the slide count. So doing a hard thing to say, because our project estimator is based on one of the parameters is number of slides. And if the number of slides changes, we can easily just send off the estimate and say, well, here's what happened. But we need to build in this thing like, did we create the extra slides that shouldn't be really billable because they're already in there. We're just dividing it apart to make it an easier end.
But you designed it, even if it's a big statement slide, you've designed that and it probably took you a quarter of an hour.
Exactly. Well, it depends.
Okay. I know.
So as far as the communication and how to prevent scope creep, I would say that the larger the project, the more defined the project is, and the more milestones are predefined, and the more details are there. So larger projects, I think there is more scope creep, or scope is automatically kind of assumed to happen in larger projects, but it's very well defined and everybody knows when it's happening, or it's easy to point out when it's happening. I think the challenge is getting all those similar level of details and understanding for those medium to small projects that sometimes they become big projects, but a lot of times it's just, hey, can you do this presentation makeover? You know, I need it back next week. And, you know, here's the 15 slides. And then the next day, oh, hey, I added this slide in. And 2 days later, oh, hey, you know what? I updated the financials. So here's two new charts to put into it. I'm like, but we've already formatted them. You know, they're already beautiful, you know, and, you know, depending on the chart, it could be 2 minutes or it could be 25 minutes to make a chart beautiful, depending on what we did with it. So, yeah. So the bigger project, more defined, easier to explain that things have expanded. Smaller projects, I don't think we have the same level of details, and they expand, and a lot of times people don't quite see it.
So when you mean you don't have the same level of detail on the smaller projects, you're not providing a contract or you're not outlining the scope? What do you mean by that?
You know, let's talk about the contract a little bit later, because I have a few things I'd like to say about that. I think it's a whole separate topic, but I think that a lot of the small projects are, hey, I'm your existing client. Here's a presentation. I'm doing a talk in 2 weeks. Can you guys turn it around to me next week? Yes, absolutely. And we'll have a little contract set up, but we don't have milestones. We don't have deliverables. We just have a slide deck to work from. We already know their corporate standards we're going to work on. And those are the ones that kind of don't get the same attention to project scoping. And I think those are the ones where scope creep is kind of inevitable because it's a very flowing bit of information and it's hard. So we'll actually estimate, you know, we'll provide the estimate based on the fact that we know that there's going to be revisions and stuff.
I want to talk about scope creep becoming an issue too, if that's okay.
Sure.
So Nolan, I wanted to let you know that I do the same thing. I bill by the hour, and I thought that I was unique in that sense. Part of my way of preventing scope creep, or at least making clients aware of it along the way so it becomes less and less of an issue, is yes, I can do that. It's probably going to impact your estimate, your bottom line. It might take this much longer. At least we have something to compare it to. I have too started to include a range of slides, because it's so easy then to go back after a project's all done. For example, this conference that I just completed, I gave a range of slides per presenter. Now I'm able to go back, what was the actual, and justify any increase or decrease in an estimate.
Well, are you in that situation? You estimate, you know, X number of dollars or whatever. Do you go above it if you're, or do you watch out for it and give them a heads up?
Oh, I give them a heads up, but I will, but because I bill actual and I say that, you know what, this might go above estimate. I will let you know if that's going to happen, but because I bill actual, I might even come under budget. This is an estimate best to the best of my ability.
Yeah. That's what I always say too, is like, you know, if you end up being, you know, I just don't use these words, but as I, if you end up being a great client with very few edits, you know, it'll be less. But I will say, you know, in some respects, like, yes, we'll have a couple of design revisions or this and that. But I say we're pretty good at usually hitting the bullseye, you know, initially. Like, we're really good at what we do, and generally we hit that design bullseye, you know, from the beginning. But if you don't like it and you want to go for round after round after round, 20 rounds of revisions, we're happy to do that. But that's just going to, you know, increase your hours past the estimate. And that's language they understand. They know that it's on them now to help rein in the cost.
You know, I think it's really cool how we use having not spoken about this exact subject before, how we use the same language. I'll say, I'm pretty much on target. You know, when I give you an estimate, I'll be pretty darn close to that. And to hear you say you hit the bullseye, I think that's just very, very interesting.
And we use the same language too. Is this a good client or a bad client?
Well, but you know, working in this way does put a lot more of the responsibility or shares it equally between client and vendor here, because there, everybody wants to keep the cost down. Everybody wants a good process. But with these sort of all you can eat buffets, and I saw this in Sandy, you did too, in the agency world, where it's like, okay, it's $50,000, $100,000 for this ad campaign or whatever, all in. There's no rules. The client just keeps asking and asking and asking. And like, oh, well, you know, we're paying a lot of money for this. So I want to see 10 more, you know, comps. Well, okay. And they just become they feel as though it's that all you can eat buffet, without sort of working smartly, I think.
And that's- so in speaking of agencies and working smartly, one thing that I came away with from the agency world is a definition around certain actions in the process. For example, edits. Edits usually are a part of scope. Mm-hmm. You know, two rounds of edits. I define that as two rounds of edits.
Revisions, whatever.
Revisions, exactly. Changes are usually unplanned, not part of the scope, and they have to be documented. Changes may be a client, or I may decide and make a recommendation that we do something differently. Regardless, they're not part of the original scope.
A change order. That's
a change order. Exactly. And then corrections are the result of an error, and that could be on my part or that could be on the client's part. And so documenting those, in the old days in agency world, we had, I can't remember what they were called anymore, but they were a report. Every time we communicated with the client, we had to document it. And so we used those words, edits, corrections, changes.
Not to defend big agencies or even small agencies, but that's one of the reasons it's expensive, because of all this documentation, because of all this planning and paperwork and everything. Like, that's which is why at the end of the day, I personally can be cheaper than an agency if you just approach me and say, hey, you know, got 40 slides, we need a design. Great, we'll do it. Like,
that's
doesn't
right.
have to run it through, you know, legal and documenting it every week and like all that drives up costs. That's a different cost.
You know what? Yeah, we just define it as revisions, and we encompass everything. Revisions are anything we need to change from the base information. And I've never actually thought about defining if it's an edit for an edit's sake, if it's a change because content or messaging changed, or if it was a correction. That's interesting. Yeah, and I don't think I want to approach it because I can see the amount of time. Now, we document everything. So if we have a presentation with like you were saying, Sandy, we, you know, there's five presenters, I'll just say, and we actually have our task set up. So I can tell you, how much time was invested in design on each one of those people. So I can define exactly where we invested the time and why the invoice is where it is. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to change the topic slightly because now my mind is racing. So what you're saying in agency, you know, you get this all in, here's my budget. I can get, you know, we're going to do as much, everything you request within this. I've found that I'm going to provide an estimate, but I'll ask what their budget range is. Like, what are you guys looking at as a budget for this to make sure that we create a scope that works within it? And I can also let you know that if the scope adjusts, if you're going to move outside that budget, a lot of people don't want to give that information. A lot of times we do get it. Generally, I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, they got more, you know, like we're estimating this as a $4,000 project. And they already said they have $7,500. Do I raise my rates? No. But it tells me that if they want to make changes, I'm not going to sweat it. I'm going to just say, hey, we're going. On the other hand, if they come to me and say, hey, we've got $1,000 for this design, I'm looking at going, ooh, we're going to estimate this out at $1,500 already. Do we really want to take this on knowing that it may grow? Do you guys, I don't know. That's
it's interesting.
Rambling.
I mean, I will occasionally ask for what is your budget, but not in that way.
See, a lot of times I'm asking for the budget based on the fact that I want to make sure where the scope is going to work. Like, here's what you're asking for. Does this even meet what you have?
You know what? So I was concerned that you were outright asking people for their budget before you even started an estimate. But as you spoke, we do it the same. I'm having trouble getting the words out of my mouth. We approach
it's the
it
snow. It's cold out there. She's shivering, Nolan.
Shivering. I'll ask it in such a way, I ask them to describe it. If this is the informal part, we're having a conversation, I'm trying to get an idea of what they need. And I'll throw not estimates, but numbers out, like
ranges. Well, exactly.
Ranges, yes. Exactly. And I'll say, is that what you're thinking? Just like you, to get a sense for when I give them a formal estimate, are they going to faint? So I guess I do ask about budget up front.
Again, I'm more looking at it for the scope. Do we have to worry about this as the project progresses? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not like, hey, we want to make more money. It's here's what I'm anticipating us doing. Let's just make sure we're on track. And it's a very easy conversation. I should say it's a very informal conversation. And generally, it goes out really good. The bigger the client, the easier it is. So go for it.
Well, I was going to say, so after that conversation, we are going to get to a contract phase, not for all projects.
Yes.
Case, mm-hmm. But is how big is that written scope then for you guys?
Well, let's talk about large projects. Let's just say we have a big project, a full conference, hey, here's a corporate presentation, a corporate template we want to do, and a presentation makeover for our you know core library of presentation decks. You know, so we need to have enough so everyone knows what the intended project scope is. And when it's being exceeded. So on a large project, what are you guys looking at? Or what's your big concerns or thoughts or action steps?
Well, I mean, I have a standard contract with standard clauses. It's not pages and pages. I intentionally try to keep it more on the more casual side for the most part. But in every project, I will occasionally drop in new items to sort of address that scope. For example, you know, I listen very carefully to the client, you know, initially, and if they mention something that might be a red flag, for example, they might say, oh, you know, this is just for US and everything, you know, down the road, we might want to have our European partner, you know, use this. And then I'll have to have that conversation about, okay, well, that might involve different page sizes or different binding or even different copy editing. And then they'll either say, oh, well, don't worry about it, or, you know, oh, okay, well, let's add that to it. But that might be a hint that we might need an extra clause, like clearly defining that this is in letter size, is in one size, it's not, you know. And so if mm-hmm. later on they say, oh, can you do this in A4 as well, make an A4 version, then that's clearly contractually beyond scope. So that's just one sort of small example. But you really got to listen for things the client says and try to shush out.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so it varies, but in general, my larger projects will consist of an assignment description, a deliverable description, of course, the estimate, timeline, disclaimers like oh gosh, let me think of something. You guys have disclaimers, don't you?
I'm not sure. I don't know what you're...
An expiration date, which I know I need to be more consistent. This estimate will expire blank.
Okay. Yeah. So the estimate contract. Okay. Yeah. So you're giving a timestamp on when the project can get started because you've already included a timeline. If the timeline is to start next week and they don't get the contract back to you in 2 weeks, you got to adjust things. Exactly. Okay, that type of disclaimer. Okay, I was waiting for, I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, and then signatures, place for signatures. I always include the program that I'm designing to. So, the software version, the PowerPoint version I'm designing to.
Very, very smart. Very, very important. We just did a large project and it was a... it was an interactive presentation and we specified what version would need to be run. And we ran into some issues because they did use Office 365, but Office 365 on the Mac and some of the functionality wasn't there. But we did specify exactly what needed to be done. The end user didn't quite gather it. And it created a little bit of a problem there for a little bit. So that's a really good one.
Hey, Sandy, I'm gonna role play one of your clients.
Okay.
Hey, Sandy, I know you've been working on this for months and months and it's going to get finished up tomorrow. That's awesome. It's great. I love it. But actually, can you just convert it to Google Slides tomorrow at the last minute? I know it's like 600 slides, but if you could just do that for us, that'd be awesome. I'm sure that's within scope, right?
Let me get you a new estimate and timeline pulled together.
That's a Minnesota nice. Sure, I can do that.
Oh, wow. So this is a tricky conversation. So one note on that is that the project timeline, which is for me, it's a part of the contract and it's a part of the scope. So that is obviously different and defined for each project. And I actually find that to be one of the hardest things to do because I've got to look at, we're guessing, like when's the client going to actually have all the content? Because they just asked us for a presentation, but they want it as a deliverable in 3 weeks. Are they really going to have everything to us tomorrow or is it going to be the middle of next week or when is it? So the timeline is a big, I like how you use the word disclaimers about that because we kind of do that, but not as clear cut as you do, Sandy. So I'll put it in there. Here's the timeline. Project estimate is based on above timeline being met.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, so I guess that's my disclaimer. It's like, hey, you have to meet this timeline with your response and stuff. Otherwise we have a different thing. Our super large corporate clients, they have super legal teams and they have super SOWs or statements of work documents and that they fill in all the blanks and we're just there to adjust them or agree to, and eventually agree to them. It's like we don't get to author much of this. Those projects have lots of details and it's pretty clear where scope was expanded when it went beyond it. And then it's a matter of, okay, how do we get the, a supplemental invoice to go out to adjust for that? They don't have a problem with it. It's because it's so defined. I think it's the other 80% of our projects that are simpler definitions. They're simpler project scope. Well, no, not simpler project scope. They're simpler contracts or agreements. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that actually have more, when we get down to invoicing, it's like, did we really exceed the scope and are you agreeing with it? Okay. So quick question.
Wait, before you go on the question, I have a question of you. So do you include payment terms in there in your contract?
No. Well,
I
okay.
Do.
So you do. Well, that's a master service agreement. Statement of works are what I'm looking at for this. Now that's, when we have a smaller client, sometimes they're wrapped together and we kind of list terms. It's basically the very last tagline of our estimates. It just says, here's the terms. But larger clients, we have a master service agreement and those are outlined with how we're going to be paid and when we're going to be paid, stuff like that. So I guess I don't really think, again, it's finances. I don't really want to think about it that much. So maybe it's my own personal, I don't want to deal with this. That could be a bad answer. That really could. But no, I don't really put it. Nolan, do you put it in all your individual contracts or individual project requests?
Specifically?
Payment terms. Like when upon approval, one half on a new client, one half.
Yeah, well, generally for temp. Actually, for anything that's project rate, yes. And that's another reason I push people towards hourly. I say, if you want to do a whole contract and scope everything, you're going to have to, you know, give us 50% or 30% upfront. Whereas if we're just working hourly and you're not a new client or whatever, you know, then we'll just bill you at the end. But new clients, even if it's hourly, we always bill a little bit upfront.
Yeah, like I said, at the very beginning, we're getting a staff accountant to hopefully move that along. I'm just lucky that we're keeping up with invoices and getting them out. Pre-billing is just not even a thought right now. There's just too much going on. Okay, question to kind of get me off of the financial conversation here. I'm curious, when you consider a project agreement is agreed to, so no matter what you're doing for your agreement, you know, when is it like, okay, we've got an agreement?
When I get the parchment back with the blood signature, the drop of blood.
Okay. No. So you want a signed document back?
Yes, I want to sign. If we're doing a contract, I need the countersignature. That is what it is.
Sandy, are you the same, or do you have a different philosophy?
Well, with the bigger projects, yes, I wait for the signed contract or in an email, a response that says, yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. That's what I was. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I didn't want to say it because I'm kind of curious if we're going totally off the rails here. I've moved to sending the project estimate, and the estimate includes all the project scope details in it. And if a client replies to that email with project approval, that's our contract. I don't need their signature or anything else. The email chain is it. You got this attachment. You see it all. You've replied that attachment is approved. Now, if they send a separate email and say, hey, we're good to go, I say, no, I need a reply to that existing, like the original email, so that I can say that's the document you approved. I can look at the email chain. Only our super large clients do we need signed documents back and forth, and that's more for their paperwork than ours. And even then, after we've done it, we start doing smaller projects. It's email approvals. I mean, what do you guys think of that? Give me counseling. Is this good or bad?
Occasionally I'll do that kind of thing if it doesn't rise to the level of contract, but I do need some sort of agreement. I'll just send me an email back saying agreed that, for example, like if we work on a rush rate, sometimes I'll just say, yep, happy to do it. Just say you're okay with the rush rate for this.
That's interesting, because we'll actually do a new estimate saying, you know, hey, this revised timeline is now a rush project. So here's the revised estimate. Can you reply to this thing? Approved. And I find that a lot of people opening up a PDF and either printing it and then scanning it, or opening up a PDF and doing a digital signature. Sometimes they can't do it. They're on their phone or they're on the right software. So we just kind of went to this all email communication flow. But okay, cool. Thanks. I feel a little better.
Being a former federal prosecutor myself, that is totally legal. No, it is. It's fine. I mean, it will. That's just fine.
Well, what if a budget shrinks? I mean, a project shrinks.
Like the opposite of scope creep?
Scope retreat?
Yeah, there we go.
Do you ever give money back?
We have.
Very grudgingly.
Well, it's not money back. We've not returned money, but we have sent final invoices for less than the project estimate. Yes. I guess that's what I would say. There's also the balance of, did we produce the design just faster than the average designer? I think we get brownie points for experience, and making us better and faster is still within project scope to bill a reasonable or a fair rate. How about, so what's the, Nolan, what do? Do you have scope? Would we retreat?
If it's just hourly, we'll very often do hourly caps, and very often we just don't hit them. It's always nice to overestimate, the amount of work that's going to be involved. So then when you come in under, it's certainly nice. I mean, I don't do that always intentionally, but you always want to err a little bit on the side big. Absolutely. Like if a client agrees to X number of dollars, whether it's project or not, and it just, the scope kind of changed within it, like I just to keep the relationship healthy, I'm not gonna, you know, screw them just by charging them more for work that basically wasn't done. So it's rare, but on a project rate, but And no, I've never actually returned money, but I've certainly billed less than I anticipated.
Because I use QuickBooks, I always have a cover letter that goes with the invoice, and usually it's a recap. This is for the work I completed in March for our project, blank, blank. And that just, people read that, they know what the invoice is for. Even though it's listed on the invoice, it's nice to reiterate that in the cover letter. But I also use that as an opportunity to say, we came in under budget because blah, blah, blah. Or as discussed, this is a little bit higher than our original estimate because. So it's the bottom line is, yes, I do come in under budget. I don't give money back. I haven't had to. Great. I'm very grateful for that. And I let them know about it. Does scope creep ever become a stall, scope stall? I mean, the client changes a project, but does not have the time to work through the details. Yeah. So the project just goes on hold.
Yes, all the time.
I know. I knew the answer to that. It was rhetorical.
You put a glossary next to the show notes for this one. We've got scope stall, scope retreat. This is great. Mm-hmm. What do you do? What do you have scope stall?
When scope is in retrograde. Yeah, I mean, I that happens with a number of my clients, and that's the reason I have this this kill clause in my contract saying, you know, if 90 days passes from the signing of this contract and it's not done, I can finish the project and bill for any hours put into it. I have one client who is notorious for starting projects, having conversations, and they never follow through with them. And it got to the point where, I've only done one or two things for them like over 4 or 5 years, and yet we've had 6 or 7 conversations about different projects. So they wanted me to come in for an in-person meeting in New York to talk about a new project. And I was upfront with them. I said, look, you know, a lot of the projects we've talked about have never happened. So I normally wouldn't bill you for this meeting, but I'm going to have to bill you if this project doesn't get started. And they're like, okay. And sure enough, we had the meeting, great meeting. Okay, we're going to get back to you next week with content. 3 months later, didn't hear from them. And I sent them a bill, which they paid for that meeting. So
great.
You know, just got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy, scope stall, things well, just won't hold.
I usually don't, but I have a project that has been on the books for over a year. I did not include a kill clause in it. I regret that every day. And they are over budget and they are fighting me every step of the way, every time they ask for, I mean, it's a nightmare. So
it's still ongoing. It's just not finishing.
It's not finishing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You said 90 days is how long a project has to be on hold before you'll just close it out.
It depends on, depends on the project. Sometimes it's 120, sometimes it's 60. What? I mean, it depends because,
wow.
I mean, it depends. Maybe I'm doing what you think that's too short.
No, we do 30 days. If we don't hear from you for 30 days.
Well, it's not that I don't necessarily hear from them. It's if they say, oh, this project will, we need this, you know, in 30 days from now. So I put a 60 because.
Oh, so it's an ongoing project. Exactly. You're still communicating. We do. Hey, if we don't hear from you in 30 days, we're going to actually.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't.
If we don't hear, you know, if the final deliverable is given to you, we call it final and we don't hear from you in 15 days. We're just going to close it out. We can reopen it. If we're in the middle of a project and you just fall away for more than 30 days, we're just going to close it out. Everything's there to pick up again. We're just going to invoice it out because we have to come up with a new timeline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no,
I see your side. If an entire project, even the ongoing process. So like Sandy is saying, this one is just kind of dragging out. And it's not that the client isn't doing things. It's just taking a really long time to get things done.
Yes.
Do you have any tricks for dealing with clients and situations when this happens? So what? Who's more tactful around here than I am? How do you diffuse the situation?
You know what? I'm more tactful now that I don't do all those conferences. It's interesting. I am more likely now to say, sure, with a smile in my voice, and you know, I'm there and then out, but I will let them know if the changes and edits that they're making are part of the original scope and what impact it could have on their budget or their timeline.
What about you, Troy?
Well, some projects we just, yeah. Okay. So yes, I do have a trick or a way we, not a trick, but here's a way we deal with a lot of these things. We'll just invoice it out. and say, here's an invoice for all for the project as completed. We'll have a supplemental invoice for the final project to be sent out when we actually get it finalized. So
that's a good one.
And it usually works out well. And actually, what's amazing is that'll usually spur action. Oh my gosh, well, let's get this done then. Like, well, we still sent you the invoice. Let's go and get it done. But, you know, yeah, that's been something that's worked pretty well.
You're right. I do hear from clients usually shortly after I invoice them.
Yeah, that's a, of course, it's also scary not to hear from a client after invoicing.
Thanks, Sandy and Nolan. Everyone handles project setup, client requests differently, and it's been really great just talking about how we each handle project scopes and project scope creep. Hopefully, everyone listening heard a few things valid for their workflow. They made a few notes on things that will totally apply to them. I actually have made several notes, so this is very good. Everyone, have a great week of design, and stand by. We're going to do some pro and tech tips.
My pro tip is an update from our last recording or last podcast. I had mentioned that I'd ordered a golden coil planner. And what was unique about the planner is that I was able to customize the types of pages that I want.
Yeah,
that I use.
Yeah, your little storyboard, the post-it.
Oh, my gosh. It's beautiful. It is just beautiful. It makes me want to write and plan. The wow. Storyboard pages are beautiful. The note-taking pages are the gridded dots. Mm-hmm. So it's just beautiful. So I would recommend it. I think there's a link in the notes. Go ahead and check it out yourselves. Take a look at goldencoil.com and I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Cool. Wow. Okay. So my pro tip this week, I'm going to go with, my pro tip this episode is running a presentation in Presenter View, and I got to specify it's for on a Windows computer. So Presenter View is a full screen view. You can't see anything else, you know, no apps or anything else behind it. But if you need to see something else behind it without escaping out of the presentation, clicking the Windows key on your keyboard will bring up the bottom taskbar. And from there, you could open up like File Explorer. You can open up File Explorer and you can copy a new file onto the computer to be ready. You can confirm the presentation name. Total side note, why does Presenter View not have information about what the current file is that you're running? Mm. It just horribly, you know, because I'm usually running 2, 3, 4, 6 computers and I want to make sure they're all running the same file name, and, you know, sheer paranoia will have me checking that constantly. I'm like, why isn't it in the top? Okay. So side note there, Presenter View. So I'm using that Windows key a lot to get the information. Just remember the focus is off the slideshow. So you are no longer able to advance to the next slide. Any animation or video will pause. So there are some gotchas with doing this, but you don't have to actually escape out of the presentation to go do other things.
Nice.
Very cool. How about you, Nolan?
My tip is a new book that was just published last week called The Menard System. So you might be familiar with Charles Joseph Menard, his most famous. He was a 19th century information designer, basically, and map maker.
Wait, hold on. Sandy, quick poll. Are you familiar with Charles Joseph Menard?
I am not.
You're not. Okay.
Neither am I. Definitely in your own niche.
Oh, I'm in my own world here. Okay. So if you're familiar with Tufte, Edward Tufte, which you are, he kind of made Menard famous in the last few decades.
Hold on. Is this a Dataviz book?
It kind of is. Yes, it is a Dataviz book.
I would have predicted that already. Okay, go for it.
So Tufte kind of made him famous again because he reprinted his Napoleon's March to Moscow graphic. Okay. He's usually known just for that one map or that one graphic, which Tufte sort of promoted and everything. And it's an amazing graphic of information design. Tufte says it's the best one ever created, but he has others. He has about 100, maybe I'm guessing about 100 other works. And so Sandra Reg, Reg, uh, want to get her name right because I've been emailing with her recently. Sandra Rendgen. Sorry, Sandra, if I'm mispronouncing that. So she just put this book out, which is his complete works. And it starts off with a biography of him and some analysis, and then reprints in high resolution every one of his known works, which are housed at some place in France. And I've also been emailing the archivist there trying to for something else. So in the past week. But it is an amazing book. And there are a lot of his designs that I did not know about, that I'd never seen before, maps and charts and things. And they're just beautifully done. And there's also the Sandra's analysis of how he did it is interesting as well. In that he would like distort maps and things just to make the data clearer. So he sort of understood what was most important and his minimalism. So anyway, I'm just in love with this book. I've been sort of pouring through it, you know, over and over. It's called The Menard System. You can get it on Amazon. That is my tip of the week.
You're such a geek.
I know, aren't I?
You both are.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, the design studio team focused on presentation design, real designers doing professional presentation design. We're at tlccreative.com. We have a blog at thepowerpointblog.com. And we're on Facebook at facebook.com/TLC Creative. Services. Wait, do you need services? Now I gotta go look at it. Next.
This is Nolan from Nolan Ames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. If you need training in data viz or presentation, you can check us out at nolanhamescreative.com. And the only thing of mine you'll find on Facebook are pictures of my twin girls.
I love it. And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.
Hey, so really quick, you do have to, Facebook is TLC Creative Services, so facebook.com. And the cool thing about this episode, I'm actually on flights for a project I wasn't really expecting. So that's what I'll use my time in the air flying across the East Coast. What's really cool, doing a project for DARPA.
Oh.
Secret stuff.
Wow. Yeah. That is very cool.
I don't know who that is.
The Government Agency for Advanced Research Projects. They're the people for why we have lasers and autonomous cars.
Do you need security clearance on that?
Nope, can't talk about it. Okay, end of the podcast. Bye.